Good morning. I call House Committee on Fisheries to order. Today is Tuesday, March 26th. It is 10:05 a.m. We are meeting in the Max Grunberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Shelby with the Juneau LIO and Cheryl with House Records. The following members present is Representative Hemshue, Representative Carpenter, Representative Stutes, Representative McCabe, and myself, Chair Vance. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have two items on today's calendar, and that is to bring back House Bill 329, the Aquatic Farm and Hatchery Leases, by myself, the Chair, and bring back House Bill 195, Cook and Lit New Admin Area Permit Buyback, by Representative Ruffridge. First on our agenda item today, we will bring back House Bill 329, Aquatic Farm and Hatchery Leases, and there are five amendments before us. So there is amendment number one by myself, the Chair. Rep. McCabe, would you move amendment number one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment one.
Object for purposes of discussion.
There has been an objection. I'd like to call my Chief of Staff, Jake Almeida, to please walk us through amendment number one, if you would put your name on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Fisheries Committee, for the record, Jake Almeida, Committee Aide, Chief of Staff to Representative Vance. So before you on amendment number one for HB 329, it seems like a lengthy amendment, but two pages in length, it's rather simple. There were many questions raised about the length of the lease. There's a lot of concern from members of the committee and a few of the stakeholder groups, such as the Alaska Mariculture Alliance, and that's on page two, subsection N. Regarding the length of the lease to be negotiated for a period up to 25 years. So we, with the chair and in coordination with members of the Mariculture Alliance and DNR, we came to a compromise with the initial length of the lease to still be 10 years. That's been the case for tideland leases since the statute was first put into law. And we're going to be consistent with that. So all tideland leases for mariculture farmers or for carbon sequestration, whatever it is, you'll get 10 years. And the initial, you know, the beginning process of that, you go through the best interest finding, you pay fees to the department, you do kind of the whole thing. It's kind of a lengthy process. What we're doing in amendment number two is we're making it a simple renewal at the end of the 10 years if the department chooses. They could renew your lease up to 20 years. And so the
page number three fifties. Back on the record.
And for the record again, Jake Almeida. So kind of the idea for a practical example, you know, we have Mr. Paul Foos behind us. He grows gooey ducks. The maturation for those is about like 7 years. So you imagine if you're a gooey duck farmer and you get your first lease for 10 years and about 7 to 8 years into it, you're just starting to have them grow. And then 3 years after that, the department's going to come check on your lease and say, hey, well, what have you done? How many gooey ducks have you sold? Well, it takes him most of his lease just to get them going. So the idea is in amendment number two, it's will be a simple renewal.
Page two.
Sorry about that. The intent is that the department could renew the lease for the leasee up to 20 years. It wouldn't have to be 20 years, but the legislative intent would be up to 20 years. And this gives the leasee, you know, who in theory is a business owner, whether it's gooey ducks, razor clams, kelp, whatever it is, the idea is with up to 20 years, that is security for them to find more potential investors to continue growing their business and updating it and helping it grow. And it just provides security for both the department and the lessee. So that is what we are doing on in amendment number one. And if there's any technical questions, we have Ledge Legal online.
Any questions from committee members on amendment number one? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Through the chair, since, if I understand correctly, there's a 10-year lease period, and then
a decision's made for an additional 20-year lease period. Do I understand that correctly?
Through the chair, Rep. Carpenter, that's correct.
Okay. So in the example, through the chair, of a business that is taking 7 years to get started, my P&Es took 4 years before I could even start marketing. So 7 years for GUI Ducks, 3 years of production, and a business, many businesses don't survive 5 years of actual sales, right? So if we're into 2 or 3 years into the 20-year period and the business goes out of business, does that mean that that lease is still tied up, or does it go back to the state, or how is that dealt with if during that 20-year period the business becomes insolvent or is no longer in operation?
Representative Carpenter, we do have Flip Pryor from the aquaculture section, Chief Department of Fish and Game. Would you like to ask?
I think whoever can answer the question.
Yep. Madam Chair, Kate Dufault with DNR would actually be best positioned.
Kate Dufault with DNR. Ms. Dufault, if you could answer that, and then we can go from there.
For the record, my name is Kate Dufault. I'm the Program Manager of the Aquatic Farm Leasing Program for the Department of Natural Resources and the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Through the Chair, Representative Carpenter, if a leaseholder, if their business fails within 2 to 3 years following the lease renewal, they can either request lease closure from the department and they can relinquish their lease back to the state. Or if we find out that their business has failed and they are not in communication with the department, we can take steps to close that lease.
Follow up.
Okay. Maybe I need the statute reference to go look at, but the department may close it for a business that has gone out of business is not as finite as shall close it if they go out of business. Could you point me to the statute or the regulation that would guide your decision as to whether that lease would be closed?
Representative Carpenter, this is Kate Dufault for the record. I don't have that specific statute in front of me. I'd be happy to provide that in writing following this committee hearing. I will just describe our lease closure process when someone does not remain in good standing. It is a 90-day process, and we send letters to the leaseholder via email and mail to try to reach them. If they do not respond with the needed information to become back in good standing with their lease, we will then close the lease after that 90-day process.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just see a second section in amendment number one talking about the preference. But I just want to ask if that section could be discussed. So starting at line 19 on page one.
Through the chair, to represent him, shoot. For the record, Jake Almeida. Yeah, this this was a preference that also came into discussion to provide security for the leasees. This came up talking with the Alaska Mariculture Alliance that in having a renewal process, if the department defers, it's in the best interest of the industry to have the department defer to those who have been, you know, invested into the first 10 years of that lease and not simply be in a position where, you know, they have records, they have transactions to prove, they have growth to prove. And then if someone who has more money than them just steps in and, you know, outbids them on their lease, that's not in good faith to the industry and what we're trying to promote. So that is the intent. That's the legislative intent with that language, the preference language on lines 20 through 23 that you're looking at.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Carpenter, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number one has been adopted. Representative Stutes.
I move amendment number 2.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have had several conversations over the last week with the AMA as well as individual farmers and other people in the mariculture industry. And it's such a new industry that this is a little bit hand-tying, this amendment, not knowing enough about the industry and how long everything is going to take. So with their agreement, Madam Chair, I respectfully withdraw this amendment.
Okay. Amendment number 2 has been withdrawn. With that conversation, thank you, Representative Stutes. I just would like to point out, I want on the record that one of the major concerns that we hear from the industry is the enforcement mechanism that Representative Carpenter brought up is, what does the department do if someone has gone out of business? Are they still squatting on that lease that could be used for production? And that's one of the concerns by the department of how do we move forward in this when with the department and wanting to make sure that we're still providing that food production and growth that the industry wants without people squatting. So that has been voiced to us, and I would encourage the department to look at what they can do to be able to meet the industry where they have their needs without having a heavy hand of government for the growers who are trying to get production because it does take some time. So Representative Stutes, if you have any more comments for the record for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Just for the record, I did assure the individuals and the growers that I spoke with, if they found that this becomes a problem with people squatting on these parcels or these leases and not growing, that if they were to come to this committee, that I was sure that the committee would be interested in helping them over that hump. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Stutes, amendment number 3.
I move amendment number 3.
Object for discussion.
This is just a very simple amendment, and all it does is it includes gooey ducks in the Aleutian chains. They were inadvertently left off because there was no gooey duck farming. This is agreed to. The department has no issues with this. It's just kind of a cleanup amendment to enable gooey duck farming to take place out in the Aleutian Islands.
Any questions on amendment number 3? Hearing none, is the Representative Carpenter, is the objection maintained?
I will remove my objection.
Hearing no objection, amendment number 3 has been adopted. Representative Hemshute.
Madam Chair, I'd like to withdraw amendment number 4.
Amendment number 4 has been withdrawn. Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both amendment 4 and 5 are not needed because of amendment 1. So I respectfully withdraw number 5.
And that concludes our amendments. That brings the bill before us as amended. Are there any further questions from the committee? I just want to point out again that we do have Kate Dufault, the Program Manager for Aquatic Farms Leasing Program under DNR, and Flip Pryor, the Aquaculture Section Chief, Department of Fish and Game, and also Altheus Bullard from Legislative Legal Services online for questions. Hearing no further questions, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment. I'm pretty excited to see this bill moving. I think it's really good. I think it's good for the economy of the state. It's nice to see people thinking outside the box and so far as new industries. And I feel really honored to be a part of moving this industry forward. So I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. Any further closing comments for members? Okay, well, I will, since it's my bill. I, too, am excited about this new industry and just want to thank those of the Alaska Mariculture Alliance and Mr. Paul Foose and just others who have engaged with us and those and you members who have mariculture in your districts. You know, this is a up and coming industry, a lot of excitement, a lot of new territory here. And I look forward to seeing it grow. There's a lot of opportunity here, and this is an alternative for our fishermen who have a lot of uncertainty right now. This is a great way for them to continue to stay in the industry, working out in the water that they so much love and enjoy. And I want to put on the record that the section that deals with the carbon sequestration tideland leases, that it is my intent that we have a further conversation in Resources Committee with those members who do leasing work on a regular basis, that we can find out what the parameters are for this industry as far as the joint use of those tideland leases so that it is appropriate for Alaskans moving forward. But I want to thank the committee for the work that they did on this bill. Representative McCabe, do I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the committee move HB 329 version 33-LS0552 /R from committee as amended with the attached fiscal notes and give legislative legal services permission to make all technical and conforming changes necessary.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 329 as amended has moved from committee. We will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Back on the record, and for our second and final agenda item today, we will bring back House Bill 195 by Representative Ruffridge. There are a couple of amendments before the committee today. Representative McCabe, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
Object for discussion.
Amendment number one is deleting the words closing certain water to commercial fishing. This bill directly deals with fishermen in the Cook Inlet, and it is just against my nature to want to close any water to commercial fishing. I believe that that would exclude a certain sector, and feel that the bill can still move forward with the buyback without closing waters to certain types of fishing. So I would just like to state for the record that we do have Altheus Bullard, the drafter from Legislative Legal, online. We have Glenn Haight, CFEC commissioner, and Ken Coleman, who is the president of the Eastside Coalition Association. So do members have any questions on amendment number one? Hearing none. Representative Carpenter, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number one has been adopted. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number two.
Object for discussion.
Thank you. I will now invite my policy advisor, Mr. Bob Ballinger, to the table to be able to walk us through this intent language and the purpose of it. If you please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Ballinger from Representative Vance's office. The purpose of the intent language is really probably the primary thing. The nature of this legislation, because it basically covers a relatively small geographic area, it brings into questions issues of things like local legislation that's prohibited or equal protection. So what the intent language here is to explain why there is a legitimate state purpose for providing this mechanism for the east side of Cook Inlet, as opposed to other places, that these individuals are uniquely situated with a particular problem that has not faced other places, and it is an issue that the state needs to address. So that is the intent language. So you'll see in here it explains that because of the nature of the regulations that have been put on the people who are fishing this area, they've actually had their fishery shut down recently. This year, their fishery is limited, I think, to like one catch and then a dip net. You know, so they're basically close to being shut down this year. And even recently, over the last several years, they've been really restricted in the number of hours that they can fish compared to historical settings. So this basically just goes through and explains, you know, why that is. It's particularly important historically, which I'm sure that every fishery around the state would claim that same thing. But this area has been a very important fishery that has provided a lot of revenue for the state and provided lives for the families here. And then it also goes into the reasoning for providing this instead of using the state buyback program that they have now. So there is a state buyback program which would require a tax on everybody, and it just would be really hard to tax all the fisheries in order to create a buyback program for the small regional area. And then the other thing is there's also provision here that says that in order to sell your permit back to the agency, to the commission, that you have to have had it for a period of time. And that's just to limit the speculation, keep people from jumping in and buying a permit at garage sale value in order to potentially just sell it back to the state. And I'm happy to answer any questions about this intent language.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. So I understand the portion, excuse me, the portion that where you said it explains that you have to have had your permit for a certain length of time. But I didn't get the first part of what you were saying. It's all intent language explaining why this is a buyback program. Is that what you're saying? And why would we have an amendment to explain? That doesn't make sense to me. So maybe I'm not understanding what this is all about.
Absolutely. Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office, through the chair. Most of the time, you don't put legislative intent on a bill. This bill in particular, because of the fact that it there were some concerns from the very beginning about whether there could be a question of a violation of equal protection, because it's providing a benefit to people in one area, right? One group of fishers, which also creates the potential problem of it being local legislation that benefits one area to the exclusion of everybody else. So The answer to both those problems is the same thing. Is there a legitimate state purpose for this program? And are these individuals uniquely situated compared to other individuals? And so in order to do that, one thing that will be extremely important in upholding this legislation is to know what the legislative intent. You know, why was it that the legislature thought it was important to create this program here that benefited these people as opposed to something that would be broader? And so that is why we put the legislative intent in here, is to make it clear that these individuals in the mind of the legislature are uniquely situated, primarily because their fishery has been shut down. They've not been able to fish at all, and at least for 1 year. And then on a continual basis, their fishery is shut down to the extent that, you know, you're not going to be able to support a family based on this. You're not going to be able to afford to maintain your equipment. It is not profitable to do it at the level that the state is allowing them to fish this area.
Follow up. Thank you. It just seems to me like it's a lot of extra paperwork. This is not the first buyback program that the state's been involved in. This is not the first fishery that has been shut down. And I just think I certainly can understand the portion that says you have to have had your permit for whatever time period in order to qualify for the buyback. But the rest of it, I think, is just superfluous.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Stutes, I can answer that question. You and I have seen this bill for more than 6 years, for quite some time, and it's always received the same outcome. And because there are constitutional questions and a question of the legislative intent, I thought that it would be more appropriate to have the legislative findings in writing and the intent of the legislature in writing as it moved through the process. If we want a different outcome this time, we're going to have to do things a little bit differently than how the bill has been treated in the past. And by having things in writing, we're able to see it and articulate it as it moves along, rather than the courts and members having to listen to the legislative record in various meetings. So I agree that typically this is not something that we do, and that it is a lot of language that we normally don't see. But this is a unique case that I'm hoping that this will articulate why this is different and necessary at this time. So I hope that answers your question.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up, Representative.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. And I understand. But that's the committee process. And people get this information as it goes through committee. And I think that we have too much. You know, and I'm always hearing, oh, we've got too much government control, we've got too much paperwork. And I think this adds to it. I think that as it goes through the committee process, people get this information and people pay attention. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions from committee members? Representative Hemshue.
Thank you, Chair Vance. Through the chair, I have not studied buybacks as deeply as your office, so I'm just going to ask my question and hope that you've got the research to be able to answer. I'm looking on the last page of the amendment, section F, which talks about taxing existing operators and taxing outside of existing operators. And I know there was a previous buyback program for the Saners in which they tax themselves. Why is that not an option here? And I'm going to tie that to the further issue that is in the main bill of the amount of the payment for each permit, given that the value today is $13,400 according to CFEC, and we have a number of $260,000 in here. If it's $13,400, could we not, in this amendment, allow the set netters to tax themselves in order to reduce the number of nets and buy back some of these permits? So that was a long question.
Yeah. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hemshue. So I think that's a great question. The problem would be that there is not enough, there isn't enough population in this group to tax it enough in order to acquire enough of the permits. So, and that mechanism doesn't exist in the law today. So what exists in the law today is a general tax that would be applied. And honestly, I wish I could tell you exactly what fisheries it applied to, but it would generally apply across the state. Everybody would be paying the tax. And it is not a, and that's available today under current law, but it's just not a very likely scenario that you tax everybody in order to buy out this population. It's not the best mechanism, not the best policy. And so the bill sponsor was seeking another policy that make it that you could do it without putting all the additional tax on everybody else. And frankly, everyone around the state, for the most part, has got some level struggling.
Representative Himmelshoot, we do have Commissioner Glenn Haight of CPC online who can answer more specifically regarding buybacks. Follow up?
Thank you.
Greetings. This is Glenn Haight, Commissioner of the Commercial Fisheries Industry Commission. Madam Chair, through the Chair, Representative Himmelshoot, I guess the short answer to the question is that is the value. Mr. Ballinger touched on it. There isn't the value amongst those existing permit holders to afford that. The Southeast same permit buyback that didn't have the same kind of confines. The pink salmon, fish were healthy, and those folks were able to afford to pay that tax.
Follow up? Thank you. Through the chair, so this might go to Commissioner Haight. Is there some reason that the tax, when you say the value isn't there, spread over years, the value could be there. So with the in the instance of the Saners, was that something where the tax was collected for one single season, or was that spread out over years?
Through the chair, Representative Himmelshoot, I don't have specifics on that, but it took several years to pay that off. They did three different buybacks. The last two involved a tax, and my understanding is they have paid that off, but it probably took at least 10 years.
Follow up? So through the chair, I mean, broadly speaking, it's going to be taxpayers of some sort or another funding this, whether it's federally funded or, a tax on others fishing in that area or other set netters at those sites. So broadly speaking, this is still going to be paid by taxpayers one way or the other. So to say that the value isn't there spread over enough time, it might be, but you're saying the amount of time is prohibitive to make it a functional system.
Through the chair, Representative Himmelshoot, probably a good question to ask someone like Mr. Coleman. But I think I'm repeating what I've heard from them that they don't believe that their remaining participants would have the kind of resources or the surety of catching more fish in order to pay that off.
Final
follow up.
I would be curious, Commissioner Haight, if you could speak to, and now I'm a little bit on the main bill, the value today of $13,400 versus the buyback price of $260,000. Are you able to speak to that, or should I hold that question for the sponsor?
Madam Chair, I can touch on it a little bit. Value is an interesting question when you look at this. I wouldn't think that the permit value itself is the best measure right away. That permit, the price hasn't been above $20,000 in the last 20 years. I mean, a couple times it did go above that, but it's remained very low. And that's unlike what it was doing in the 90s when it would move around like most permits do. They're pretty, the prices can be pretty volatile. So I think it's because that fishery has been under the gun so much in terms of allocation that's had an impact on that permit price. So I mean that's a starting spot, but not a great one. I think what you could do is look at the fishery when it's healthy, and what are the returns there, and do a basic business valuation. And if you looked at cash flows into the future and discounted it back to today's dollar, gave yourself a sell event 3 to 5 years later, I mean, you can start to move the figure up closer to that $200,000 number. So the other thing we hear is that what we have here is a situation where the fishery has been allocated away from a group, and it's being put to other uses. It's personal use fisheries or other in-river fisheries. And so effectively, you know, you have a eminent domain situation here. So maybe that has a value too. There's a number of ways that people could look at this.
Thank you, Chair Vance, and thank you, Commissioner Haight, for answering those questions. And I might go deeper when we get back to the main bill. But on the amendment, my question through the chair is this amendment seen as friendly by the bill sponsor?
Representative Ruffridge. If you could please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Vance. Justin Ruffridge, Representative District 7, Kenai-Soldotna. Through the chair, Representative Himshute, yes, this is a friendly amendment.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I have a question for the commissioner. How many set net licenses or permits, excuse me, are we talking about in the Cook Inlet area?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, roughly 740, I would say, permits total. There has been probably about 420 that have fished on the east side area. So, yeah, just over 400.
And thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. And how many permit holders are there? I know that if you can give me an average, because I know that many, many of the permit holders are multiple permit holders.
Certainly, through the chair of those students. I would, just the east side, I don't know the entire inlet off the top of my head, but I think on the east side you've got about 340.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions on amendment number two?
Me.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you. And Representative Stutes raises an interesting question. So, and let's get right to the bottom line of this. Somebody has five permits, and they want to monetize three of them and yet still continue to fish. So under this bill, we're going to give them $750,000 plus, and yet they still continue to fish. I don't know, are the permits worth that? That's what we're curious about, I think, is if we're just throwing money at folks that are going to continue to fish, continue maybe even in the same area, if they have five co-joined areas and permits together. I don't know. I never really, I guess, thought about that much before just listening to this. So
Representative McCabe, do you have a question for Mr. Haight or the sponsor of the bill?
I guess the question is, and we're dancing around it here, but what's the value of a permit right now? I mean, what are they for sale? Maybe Representative Ruffridge has an idea there. Are they for sale on the open market? I know a lot of the SetNet sites were for sale in Bristol Bay and areas like that. So, and at the end of the day, we are fixing a problem that we did because we, the state, issued too many permits, and the fishermen clearly are telling us that. So, I don't know what the fix is. It worth the penalty to us as a state? I don't know.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Vance. Through the chair, I want to make sure that we're talking about. So this is about the underlying bill here, not about Amendment 2 any longer. But to speak to the underlying bill, there's a couple of things that I'll hope for the committee's consideration on. One, namely, that there is an assumption that if a person puts a permit into the pool, one, there has to be an election that happens for those even to exist at all. Maybe the election doesn't happen. Two, your permits that you put into that pool have to be drawn by a lottery. There's no guarantee that if you put in three and you want to fish two, maybe none of yours get drawn. There is a risk associated with the buyback inherently. Three, just because the buyback program goes forward, it was clear from the recent Board of Fish meeting that the current status quo in the Cook Inlet, particularly for east side set netters, is essentially you will not fish. And so, you know, the persons that don't put their permit into the lottery are also taking a risk that they may be able to fish. Now, that goes to your question about the price of a permit. And I think Director Haight actually talked very eloquently about assessing a value based off of its business metrics rather than the price of a permit. What is the cost to, one, the individual? What is the cost to the economic drivers of your community? When people are artificially told the fish are not for you, they're for everyone else, but they are not for you. And that does have a significant economic cost. And that's part of the reason for the intent language, trying to drive that circle back to Amendment Number 2, to say that this is a very unique situation. And the intent of this language in intent language is to say, please understand, because for those of you that don't live on the peninsula, and thankfully three of us do, there is, you know, a difficulty in understanding just how severe this problem has affected a very, very select group of people, while all the rest of us have, you know, a heyday with the number of fish that are coming up the Cook Inlet and into the Kenai River. So the intent language is, I think, really valid, and so I do think it's a friendly amendment. Last thing I'll say on the price of the permit, that language is actually incredibly contingent upon whether or not, one, there's an election, and two, whether or not there's funds allocated from the federal government or not. There is nothing that is a guarantee in this bill of somebody receiving a windfall of cash. There's a lot of things that have to happen in order to get there. I would say the bill here in front of us is what I would establish as a framework rather than a guarantee.
Before you continue, Representative Rutherford, would you mind putting on the record the recent Board of Fish decision regarding the Eastside set netters, just so that there's an understanding of what their this next season allowable fishing is?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Vance. So the decision by the Board of Fish is essentially to shut down the Eastside set net fishery once again, with the exception of, and this is, you know, I think many of those who are in this Eastside set net fishery have taken as almost an egregious affront, is saying, well, maybe if it does open, you can go out with a dip net and dip net your set net site, which, well, I'll let you ask an Eastside set netter what it would be like to dip net a set net site. There will be a lot of words that are probably not great for the record.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks, and through the chair, Representative Reference, thanks. You went exactly where I wanted you to go to put this all in the record, including the way that it's supposed to work. People don't understand. You know, I mean, we dance around a little bit, and they're thinking, well, why would the state give $260,000 for a $13,000 permit? But it's not quite that easy. There's a risk they take putting their permits into the lottery. It has to be done by a vote. So all those are extremely important to be to put on the record, and I totally agree with you. I mean, they shut down all the sport fishery, I think, on the East Side for the most part as well, including some that have never really been shut down before. So thanks. I appreciate it.
Representative Carpenter, or do you need another minute?
I'm good. I just have a question in regards to intent, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
So we're talking about adding intent language in. Do we... So we can get this on the record. Is this buyback part of the state's management strategy?
Through the chair, Bob Ballinger from Representative Vance's office, Representative Carpenter. The answer is, if you pass this bill and adopt this intent language, then absolutely. You know, that's the state's management policy is set as far as from a policy standpoint from the legislature, ultimately.
Chair, if I may.
Representative Rutherford.
Thank you. And maybe just a clarification to Representative Carpenter, whether or not this bill actually directs the Alaska Fish and Game to adopt a new management plan, the answer to that would be no. But the intent language that you see before you is essentially saying, as a result of your management plan, we have found ourselves in this position. So they are inextricably linked. But as far as this bill intending to override a management plan, it does not do that.
Follow up, Representative Carpenter.
Well, I guess if the current management plan doesn't include a buyback, but the legislature is going to enact statute that creates a buyback, then it is overriding at least part of a management plan. Is that, am I misunderstanding something to the sponsor?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Carpenter. So the management plan that's currently in place from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game really is an allocation question. And so, you know, this bill seeks to really have a answer to the fact that there's been a disaster in the fishery where no fish have been allocated to this group. And so that's not going to change. With this bill, the management decision about allocation of fish is going to stay. So if the question is whether or not the Fish and Game's management plan includes the number of permits in the water, then which that seems like that is outside of the entire purview of Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The permits are the permits to Representative McCabe's point. That was a decision made long before the management plan that is in existence now. So I think those two are slightly separate subjects.
Mr. Haight, could you speak to the management of Fish and Game in relationship to the permits?
Yeah, through the Representative Vance. They aren't linked together. Yeah, CFPC's permitting structure is separate. Representative Ruffridge is correct. It was established a long time ago, and that management plan that comes to the Board of Fish and is administered by the Department of Fish and Game is a dynamic plan. It changes over time. So I think in response somewhat to Representative Carpenter's question, that management plan is in place and it changes every 3 years. And what's in front of you now is something new. It's a reaction to that changing management plan. Madam Chair.
Follow up, Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, the statute or the amendment that's before us is that the legislature finds that the buyback program established by this act addresses the inadequacies of applicable existing statutory provisions. And I would, as I read that, I think existing statutory provisions includes the statutory provisions that have set up the management plan. So the question is there a recommendation from those who our statutes have set up to manage? That would be the Board of Fish, Department of Fish and Game, to reduce the east side set net permits. And that's why we have this bill.
Representative Carpenter, in this subparagraph, page 3, section F, that is where it talks about the establishment of to address inadequacies of the existing statutory provisions. The next sentence says the existing buyback provisions, which are in statute, allow for the establishment of taxes. So it is my intent that it's speaking specifically to the current buyback provisions does not meet the needs of this set group of fishermen and is not broad language speaking to the entire management of Fish and Game, but specifically to the statutes currently around our buyback structure.
Okay.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, follow up then. I just get an answer from somebody as to whether the Board of Fish or the Department of Fish and Game are recommending the closure or the reduction of Eastside set net permits at this time as part of our state management plan.
We do not have them online, but Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Vance. And I want to make sure that I understand the question, Representative Carpenter. Certainly through the management plan, the intent of the Board of Fish is very clear that the Eastside set net fishery shall remain limited at best and probably closed at worst. That being said, there has been no communication with my office regarding the intent of the Fish and Game to have some sort of alternative to this bill where they, because the permits are not theirs to manage. And so really the permitting that allows these individuals access to that fishery is out of Fish and Game's control. And so really the only option they have to shut a fishery is just to say these waters are closed to fishing for your specific group. And I want to be clear again on the record, and I was before, this is not due to a lack of the entirety of the salmon run. It is due to the lack of one specific species that has historically been the species of record for the Kenai River, and that is the world-famous Chinook salmon of the Kenai River. I'm not certain if that was the tenor of your question.
Representative Carpenter.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the not all of the Eastside set netters are in agreement that this is the right strategy to take. So there's a division with regard to the user group as to whether the legislature should take this action to provide a path for buyback. And all I'm asking is this... It seems to me that we have a constitutional problem already, and it is the fact that our managers are managing in such a way that one user group is not able to fish. And the legislature is now stepping in to say, we're going to solve the problem by removing users, by removing permits. We're not sure whether an entire permit holder will be no longer a fisherman or a fishing concern, because if they have multiple permits, maybe only one or a portion of their permits would be subject to the lottery. But in reality, reducing the permits is equal to reducing the fishing going on in the Eastside set net. So we recognize that there's probably a constitutional concern with just prohibiting one user group from fishing, and the legislature would say, okay, well then in order to do that, we'll just remove the fishermen from the equation. And I'm not sure that that's the right answer. So if the managers of our fishing, the managers of the fishery are not recommending that we're reducing this, then there's no guarantee that they're actually going to allow them to fish afterwards either. So we go through the process of putting this into statute, spend the money wherever it's coming from, because it's not clear where it's coming from right now. And we're no better off other than we have less fishermen and the remaining fishermen are still not able to fish because the management folks are not allowing them to fish. So I'm not sure that this is actually solving a problem that exists currently, which is a management problem.
Representative Carpenter, there are a couple issues, and I believe it's important that we talk about this and get this on the record. So the first is CFEC has buyback that reduces the number of permits and the gear in the water when it is no longer optimal for that fishery to have that number of permits available. That is something that we already have available in statute. This specific bill creates a different mechanism for the same function. The Board of Fish has also made a record specific to this fishery that they intend, and they have in the past, reduced the gear in the water. They have made different instructions for gear types, gear net, depth, consistently over time, and it has greatly limited the ability of the Eastside set netters to fish. I am in agreement with you that by reducing the gear in this fishery does not guarantee that the Board of Fish will continue to allocate for this fishery into the future. This is in no way a guarantee. However, by having a buyback that reduces the permits, it allows those who remain to better optimize the fishery, which is what the buyback that we have in statute is intended to do. So I hope that addresses some of the questions, but I am in agreement this is no guarantee for the current fishermen. And that is part of my struggle, is that I don't want to paint a false picture, but it is a solution that those who remain, whose permits remain, may have a better opportunity to optimize the fishery with the proper number of permits issued. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Vance. And I want to echo some of your comments to Representative Carpenter. I actually think you heard very clearly from public testimony echoings of your statements about this is a management issue. I don't think there's disagreement across the fishery that this is clearly a management issue and has very significant concerns for all the reasons that you have outlaid. Now, to the point as to whether or not this is a solution, this is an out. I don't think it's a solution to the fishery. I think in the case of an economic disaster, where many of these fishermen and families have now declared for economic disaster relief. So to the point about the dollar figure, there is dollars actively being pushed into this fishery now for economic disaster relief. And so I think in light of the fact that you and I and this committee cannot change a Fish and Game's management plan, something needs to give in here. And I don't think funneling more dollars into disaster relief is the right outcome, but certainly allowing certain members of the East Side fishery, if they want to elect to have a buyback, and then they want to take the risk of putting their permits in. And here's the thing, we don't actually know how many of the members of the East Side SetNet community will actually elect to have this. And so to your exact point about some of the members of the fishery disagree with this plan, they will actually have a chance to vote on it as a fisher group and a permit holder. And so, really this is a relatively democratic solution, I guess, to a management problem, to your exact point.
We have Representative Stutes and Representative McCabe. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair. Well, there's a couple things that cross my mind on this. First of all, in most buyback plans that have transpired, and I refer like to the Amendment 80 boats in the Bering Sea, they were self-funded. They bought out the other boats. It was a gradual, it was a federal loan, but they had every time they made a delivery, 3% came right off the top to pay that loan back. The remaining permit holders here have no stake in the game, no stake at all, no skin in the game. They put a huge price on it, on their permits. And, I kind of look at it and I say, well, as a liquor license holder, I was making my living off of owning a liquor license. Now, if the municipality all of a sudden says, well, Louise, we're going to be a dry village, does that mean that I'm going to sue the city or the borough for the loss of my income and revenue? I think we're on a pretty slippery slope here. It alarms me to be on a slope like this. I mean, it's called fishing. It's not called catching. It's called fishing. And when you go into a fishing business, and I know I'm a fishing family. My husband fished for 40 years. Some years you're in them and some years you ain't. And that is part of being a fishing family. There are no guarantees. And so to see a price put on it of $260,000 per permit is just overwhelming to me. And when I hear the stakeholders say, well, that's what I would have made in 10 years' time. Well, wouldn't that be nice? There's no guarantee. So I just think that we're on a pretty slippery slope here. And then you add to it, where is the money coming from? Nobody seems to know. So I have some real, real trepidation with this. Sorry to say.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So let's be clear that the permit system from the beginning is designed to limit the amount of fish taken. Otherwise, we could all go out there and just fish until all the fish were gone, right? So the state puts the permit system in place to limit the number of people that fish. Our management issue is we put too many permits out there for the number of fish that there are. So now we have to find a way to get them back, to sort of claw back the great number of fisheries permits out there. So I believe, after having Representative Ruffridge describe it again, the lottery system is probably the most fair way to do it. Are the permits valued too high? I don't know. Maybe. I guess we'll tell if you think your permit's worth $260,000, we'll be able to tell by the number of people that throw their permits into the lottery. If you think it's worth more than that, then you're not going to put your permit in there. And the other thing that I like about this is the vote. So we have set up this framework. We have clearly told the fishermen, here's an out, if you will, to limit the number of permits. If you want to take this path, then you need to vote for it. And I think one of the other things that we are clearly saying to the Board of Fish and to Fish and Game is, you screwed up. You screwed up, and it's going to cost us. And here we are dealing with something that Fish and Game, essentially, or whoever issued these permits decades ago, probably should have thought about. And frankly, the state does it all the time, whether it be oil or natural gas or whatever. We overuse without conserving early on, and then we have to come back and claw things back and figure out a way to undo what previous legislators have done. So my two cents. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I really do.
I would like to remind the committee members that this intent language does not speak to the dollar value that is in the legislation. I have a lot of concerns about that. This is merely setting up the framework of addressing constitutional questions of why this is a unique fishery. Representative Hemshoop.
Thank you, Chair Vance. I'm not sure if my question is appropriate. It may be to the underlying bill. I think it's about the fish. So I'll ask, and if it's not appropriate, I'll call me out of order. I'll come back with it later. My question through the chair is, I'm hearing very compelling discussion, and my question is, are the fish there or are the fish not there? The fish are there, but you're not allowed to catch them is different than the fish aren't there. Can someone clarify?
Representative Ruffridge.
Happy to clarify. The numbers of sockeye salmon that entered into that fishery last year are well documented. The number of fish that escaped into the Kenai River was well over their escapement goals. Because of the commercial fishery being shut down. So that was a really long way to say the fish are most definitely there.
Follow up. So the fish are there. So this is not a shortage of fish. This is a reallocation issue.
Representative Ruffridge.
Through the chair, Representative Hemshoot, accurate to a degree. And let me clarify, sockeye salmon are there. And this decision has been made not because of sockeye salmon being there or not there. The decision to reallocate fish has been made for a different species of fish that runs concurrently with sockeye. However, to Representative Vance's, Chair Vance's point, lots of concessions have been made. This has been a problem for a long time. Many concessions have been made on the behalf of the Eastside Setnet to alter their gear that specifically does not target king salmon. To further highlight that point, I think the Eastside Setnet group and commercial fishers of the Setnet variety have done more to try to preserve king salmon than certainly anyone in the large boat trawler division has when they try to preserve any fish that. All. I'm trying to say that tactfully.
Follow up.
Thank you. Yes, I'll try to ask this. So it's somewhere between the discussion that I've heard. The fish are there, but the other fish are interfering with the fish that they want to catch. So is it our fault? And do we have a duty to restore where we, the state, has messed up? I guess that's my question.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Vance. A great question, Representative Himshute, and one that I'm happy to provide data for. And actually, I think it is included in basis and in the documents for this bill. And that was a study that was done actually over the last 2 years to determine in a test site of set nets how many king salmon with all the new gear restrictions does a set net site catch. And the answer to that question is very, very, very few. I think I think Ken is online. He's the expert in this area. He could tell you the exact number. But, I mean, of all the fish caught, it's, I mean, a 1% of your catch is a king salmon. I think it was less than 20 fish caught overall in the entire test subject. And very few of those were the large species variety. They were alternate type fish, but Ken probably does have that exact number. But these gear restrictions have been effective at preserving Chinook salmon.
Representative Himshute, I think there's more than one answer to your question, and we do have Commissioner Haight online who did an optimal study on the permits. So, Mr. Haight, if you could speak to the results of that study for Representative Himshute.
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair, Representative Himshute. Yeah, we did what we call a modified off the number study for just the east side to try to get a handle on how many fish they needed to make a go of it and how many permits that would support. And it really we just developed ranges because it's not very certain whether they'll be able to fish or not and what the price will be. So. You know, it does depend, but that's in the report, which I believe is in your, hopefully in your material. Madam Chair, if there's something you'd like me to specifically address, I'd be happy to try.
Mr. Haight, if you could speak to the purpose of the state doing those studies and the purpose of us looking at those optimization numbers.
Oh, certainly, Madam Chair. It's in statute for CAPC, once they've limited the fishery, to go back in time and see if they got the number right. And if they got too few, then CAPC would need to issue more. And if they got too many, then they'd have to do there's provisions for a buyback. Now CAPC's only done three optimal number studies. We did this modified one last year, and we're doing one right now for a different fishery in Kodiak. But of course, no buybacks have been done through CAPC. So it's a lot of untested statutes.
Mr. Haight, is the study based upon the size of the run or the allocation?
The size of the run. Yeah, we showed that that if you take an average price of $2.09 a pound, which is like 10-year average, and they were able to catch four million pounds, that could support roughly 200 plus permits, making a minimum expected return of $15,000 after all expenses per permit.
Thank you. Any further questions, Representative?
Not on the amendment. Thanks.
All right. Representative Stutes.
I just, excuse me, I just want to make a comment. And we have 60 legislators. And it concerns me to see legislators. We have a Board of Fish. We have the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission. We have a Department of Fish and Game. Out of those 60 legislators, I'd be surprised if 5, maybe 10 are familiar with the fisheries, really familiar with it, or come from a fishing community. And for us to be making fishing policy when we have in place, as I said, a Department of Fish and Game, a Board of Fish, a CFEC, alarms me.
Thank you, Representative Stutes, but this is what we do. Any further questions on the intent language in Amendment Number 1? Or, excuse me, Amendment Number 2? Seeing none. I believe it was Representative Carpenter who had an objection. Do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do.
Would the secretary please call the roll?
Representative McCormick, absent. Representative Stoops.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
Pass.
Representative Johnson.
Siegel. Yes.
Representative Hemshoot.
Yes.
Representative McCain.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Chair Vance.
Yes.
We have one absent, 5 yeas, and one nay.
With a vote of 5 yeas and one nay, amendment number 2 has passed, has been adopted. Let's see. Representative McCabe, would you move amendment number 3?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number 3.
Object for discussion.
Amendment number 3 is simply to adjust the dates in the bill relating to the adoption, the timing of implementation of the bill. I would like to note that there are other dates that deal with the permits. Those have not been adjusted. This is simply the dates of adoption of the bill to be updated for this legislative session. Any questions on amendment number 3? Hearing none.
I remove my objection.
Hearing no other objections, amendment number 3 has been adopted. Okay. There are no further amendments, but because we had to cancel, it was my intent to move this today, but I think I've been hearing there's further concerns, and I think with the cancellation of committee because of the floor session, we may have missed when the amendment deadline was set. So I'm going to set an additional amendment deadline out of respect for the committee for tomorrow by 5 p.m. so that we can take this up on Thursday and with the intent to move it. So while we have the sponsor before us and people online, are there any further questions and considerations regarding the bill? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the statement was made by Representative McCabe that we have too many permits and that we need to reduce the permits. And I would like to know if that is an opinion that is held by the majority of the legislature, or is that an opinion that's held by the managers that we are entrusting with managing the resource?
So, Representative Carpenter, that is set by the CPC. And Mr. Haight, if you could restate what the recommendation is based upon the optimal study for the number of permits that would provide the maximum sustained yield in the Eastside set net.
Thank you to the chair, Representative Carpenter. A good conversation here. What we found was that if they have, were able to get 4 million pounds of fish paid at an average, a recent average price, that it would support 200 permits. It's been a long time since this fishery has had a good year. I was talking to one gentleman. He said it was 2011 was the last time they had a good year. So I think it's fair to say that there's too many permits on the east side. Certainly with what they have to catch.
Follow up.
So, Madam Chair, this is a CFEC recommendation to reduce the size of permit or the amount of permits.
Commissioner Haight.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Carpenter. I'm not making that recommendation, but I'm saying that there appears to be more permits out there than the fish they have to catch it. And I think this is an excellent subject to be discussed by the legislature and move it forward if that's what you wish to do.
Follow up.
Well, that's not an exact answer to my question. Is there an official recommendation for
Is there an official recommendation from managers, the stakeholders, if you will, of the fisheries, that a reduction in the number of permits on the east side set net is what is called for? Or is this the legislature making that decision or making that opinion?
So,
through the chair, Representative Carpenter, we don't have an official position on this yet. I think it's the latter.
Thank you.
Representative Carpenter, you mentioned several different groups in that, and I would like to just clarify for the record that we have the Department of Fish and Game, who is our managers. The Board of Fish simply deals with allocation, and the legislature makes the policy decision. You also mentioned stakeholders. The stakeholders do have a recommendation on that number. Representative Ruffridge, if you would speak for the stakeholders.
Thank you, Chair Vance. Certainly this bill is as a result of stakeholder input, and I also think that those stakeholders represent well the fact that there may be disagreement among the stakeholders about the right approach, hence the election process. That being said, this bill in multiple iterations has really struggled to find support from other in-river users about, you know, there's always been the, you're well familiar, I'm preaching to the choir, the fish wars. And I think we've finally reached a space where in-river users, sport users, personal use fishery have all kind of come to the consensus that as far as stakeholders of the fishery itself, the fish that are coming back to the Kenai River, something really does need to happen to help the Eastside SetNet community to reduce the number of permits of nets in the water, because the number of nets in the water cannot be sustained. It is not a sustainable number of nets, as you've heard from Mr. Haight. And then in addition to that, there has been significant management alterations to the amount of allocation of fish that are allowed and the shutting of that fishery. And so it really is, I think you've highlighted it well, the complexity of some of the user groups that all demand more fish for me and less for thee. So this is at least a tool that can be used by that user group to make that decision for themselves, whether they want to stay in or not.
Representative Ruffridge, on page 6, line 24, it's instructed the commission shall buy back not more than 200 unencumbered entry permits. So that would leave us about 240. Is that number of permits to be removed satisfactory?
Thank you, Chair Vance, and you're testing my memory of page 6 line. I don't have any gear in front of me, but thank you for letting me know what that section was about. I think actually speaking on behalf of folks that are engaged in this fishery, that number could actually increase, I think, and that would be acceptable to all the stakeholder groups and could be as high as 300 permits involved in the lottery process.
Thank you, Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So I think what Representative Carpenter said has value. It's something that we struggle with all the time. The free market, if you will. Unfortunately, we have already intervened in the free market as a state in the number of permits that we've issued, one way or the other, either too little or too many. And we're forced to do that because the resource is the resource. We can't control that as a state government. And for sustainability, which is our constitutional mandate, we have got to find a path forward to limit the number of people. So it's definitely a conundrum, and it's certainly complicated. The one thing that we have going for us right now as well, and you touched on it, Representative Vance, which is what I was going to say, is the stakeholders, in addition to the managers, are telling us that there's too many permits and they can't fish. Of course, the way to resolve that, if you wanted to do that, is the stakeholders could just go and buy as many permits as they could possibly get a hold of and then just fish one of them. But I don't know how we convince 480 people 480 people who's supposed to be the last man standing, right? So it's definitely complicated.
Representative Ruffridge, if we could speak to the elephant in the room of the dollar value associated with this buyback. I think that's probably one of the biggest areas of concern. And for me, I don't want to be giving a false hope that people who participate in this lottery are going to be able to come into a large sum of money that right now it's built on hopes and dreams of where it will come from. I know that the bill says that this will not come from the state treasury, so it would come from the federal government and private stakeholders. Mm-hmm. But can you speak to where you came up with the dollar amount and what, if there has been further conversation of what is more appropriate and realistic so that we're not creating a false incentive here to participate? Because my concern is that my fishermen right now would be saying, hey, yes, we want to do this with the idea that that's the dollar amount. So I want to be very realistic in what it is that we're talking about and that can actually happen to be able to better optimize this fishery.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Vance. I think that's a really excellent introduction to the elephant. Again, I want to go back to the purpose and the intent of the bill is to be framework language, to say that this thing can exist and here are the parameters for it. It requires an election. It requires a lottery. And then it actually does require, this is, I think Representative Himshute's favorite word, local control. This is really actually telling this fishing group, Eastside Setnet community, here the state is going to say, please move this forward. How many of you, if you want to, that's all of your concern. And in addition to that, the truth is their responsibility is to fund it. So CFEC has agreed to manage the buyback, but as far, I think Director Haight could speak to this very well. I don't think CFEC has any intentions to be going out into the highways and byways and drumming up cash for the buyback. And so I think you've heard testimony to the fact that the Eastside Setnet community has every intention of saying, if this framework exists, we will try in our absolute best effort to fund the buyback through some of these disaster relief dollars that are available or through private funding. And the truth is that $260,000 amount, that there's no guarantee of that. And I think, I want to make sure that that is on the record. I think that speaks to your concerns. You know, if 300 people all lobby in and the amount of money that's available is $5 million, well, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people. And so I think before that election can even be held, it would be my intent that the dollar figure is actually made clear to the people that are entering the lottery and that the essentially $260,000 would almost function like a cap. And would really be contingent upon, one, the number of people that enter the pool if the election passes, and two, how much available funds are there. So I don't know if that answered your question. And actually, before I stop talking, which I have talked a lot, I did want to make one additional comment on the record about the number of fish, the Board of Fish, because I spoke very succinctly on the decision for the Eastside Setnet. But the in-river users for sockeye salmon, the recent Board of Fish decision, increase the bag limit for in-river users from 3 fish per day to 6 fish per day. So this is a clear message from our Board of Fish that the fish are there, and if you want to go out there and flip and snag fish with your rod and reel, by all means, knock yourself out. But if you're a set netter, the beach for you. So, sorry, that was a lot
Thank
of talking.
Thank you, Representative Ruffridge. Yeah. Is it my understanding that the recent Board of Fish decision regarding the Eastside Setnet was that they limited one set net per permit plus the use of dip net?
That's correct.
Thank you. Further questions for Representative Ruffridge? Representative Himshute.
Thank you, through the chair. To clarify what you just said, no matter how many permits you hold, you may fish only one net. That's the new Board of Fish ruling?
It is my understanding one set net per permit plus the use of a dip net.
Okay. And then I have a question for the sponsor.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Ruffridge, I just want to understand for sure, and I know you don't have the bill in front of you, but people, permit holders who have held their permit since 2020 are eligible to enter this lottery. Testing your memory here.
Through the chair, clarification, since 2020, you mean 2020 and previous to 2020 or 2020 and on? Like to the present.
Here's what I've read, if I may, through the chair. They have to hold a SetNet entry permit for the area. They have to show some evidence that they own that permit. They have to have held the permit that it was reassigned to that area since January of 2020. So maybe they had a west side permit but were reassigned to the east side or something since 2020, and then actively participated within the two years preceding December 31st of 2022. So I guess my concern here, or my question is, if the current value is $13,400 today, and this fishery, the permits have not reached more than $20,000 of value in the last 20 years, I'm still struggling with the $260,000 number. Because if you purchased a permit at any time in the last 20 years, if I understood Commissioner Haight correctly, the permit has never cost in the last 20 years more than $20,000. So I'm still struggling with the $260,000 figure.
Thank you. Through the chair, Vance, to Representative Hemshute. Again, I think Director Haight, and I'm using his words, so I apologize if I get these wrong, Director Haight, but, you know, stated that the value of the permit itself is maybe not the appropriate question to be asking in reference to establishing a dollar amount. So some of the things that may be, you know, taken into a context is the value of being able to fish, period. So these are small businesses. So I said it in my initial bill introduction that the effect of the management decision of Fish and Game is going into a community, picking the small businesses that get to operate and telling them, go get them, Tiger, and then selecting a whole other group of small businesses and saying, but not you. And so in that case, I agree with the sentiments of Representative Carpenter. A management decision has been made, and I fully disagree with that management decision. And so does members of the Eastside SetNet community, clearly. But in lieu of the fact that this legislative body cannot change that management decision by Fish and Game, because we have given them the authority to make that management decision, we have to come up with an alternative means by which to hopefully, one, allow the fishery to open and be productive and economic drivers, and two, incentivize, because that's what it comes down to, people to want to leave the fishery. And so there is a sense of, I think, value that's attached to this in a business perspective rather than just in the cost of the permit alone.
Follow up?
Yeah, thanks. So is it just unwieldy and impossible to look at, do the election, do the lottery, and then look at the value of the fish? So you fished in these years, you were able to catch this many fish in those years. Is that a knowable number? And then the buyback is set by the individual permit and the value of that actual permit? Is that just too messy?
Through the chair, Representative Hemshute, I I'm not entirely certain that that would be very effective. One, it feels like rather than have some sort of equal access to this permit buyback, you would, in a sense, be asking to overvalue better fishermen if you happen to have the best spot and you were open for on the exact right day, and for the last 5 years you happened to crush it. At you know, I don't understand how that would be very effective. And a secondary point to that would be, this is a fishery that has not fished, and so if you're looking at a production amount to say what is the value of your permit, I would, again, echoing statements I made earlier, I dare you to call an Eastside set netter and ask them about the number of fish they've caught in the last couple of years and what the value of that was. And I don't mean to imply that Eastside set netters are in any way, volatile or would yell at you, but I think they would be very clear about how many fish that they have caught, and you would have no doubt in your mind that it is a very deeply affected fishery.
Follow up?
Yeah, thanks. I think I'm good. Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Yeah, I think there's something that needs to be said here, and I think it's just a fairness issue. We're talking about reducing permits, not permit holders. Mm-hmm. So in essence, we're talking about a legislative solution that creates a lottery where some permit holders could choose to put one or more of their permits up for sale and receive a cash payment for an elimination of that permit, but that permit holder still remains as a fisherman in the industry. Whereas others, because of the lottery system, would not have the cash payment. So in essence, going forward, since the issue is really a management issue and an allocation issue, some permit holders would have the cash on hand through the lottery to weather the storm that is occurring right now regarding management decisions, and some would not. And so from a fairness issue on the legislature's side, we are picking winners and losers. We're just washing our hands of it because we're not actually going to do it. We're going to allow a lottery to pick it. So from a fairness issue, if you're really talking about reducing fishermen, then you should be talking about reducing permit holders, not permits. Because now you have Eastside set netters who choose to give up one permit, get $260,000 for it, and then they're good. They can go another how many years worth of not favorable management decisions, whereas others in that fishery will not be in that same boat. And that, I think, is what is sticking in the craw of many Eastside set netters, is it's not fair. It's not fair that the state, the legislature is the state, picks a process that picks one over the other, or sets up a system that sets one over the other who are going to succeed and who aren't, rather than fixing the problem, which would be, if it's too many permit holders and too many permits, then eliminate the permit holders and the permits. Therefore, there's an ability for everybody who's remaining to fish. That might be more expensive, but it appears that the legislature is just kind of kicking the can over to somebody else to make the decision.
Representative Carpenter, what about the permit holders who choose not to participate? How, if we were to do it differently than what is recommended in this bill, how would that be fair to those who do not want to participate in this voluntary lottery?
Well, Madam Chairman, I don't have that bill sitting before me. You're asking an open-ended question as to what an alternative solution would be. We have a process in place right now for permit buybacks that is not being used. We're creating a second process that is lottery-based. If we've already got a system in place, then that would be one option to force that process to be used. If it's a broken process, then maybe that's not an option, but you're asking me to speculate on the record right now as to what alternatives to the bill are. I don't
I don't know that I have great answers for that question at this moment. I just recognize the unfairness that the user groups are recognizing with this approach to the problem. And I'm on board with some of what Representative Refridge has talked about regarding the allocation issue on the Kenai River. There are plenty of red salmon and plenty to go around for all user groups. Management decisions regarding the Chinook salmon have been driving the train, and we're getting that wrong. And that's the part that is ultimately frustrating.
I agree, and that I think ultimately all of us in the Cook Inlet, and especially the East Side Set Netters, the reason that this is so hard for us to swallow is because we feel that we don't want this at all. The fishermen want to fish. There's fish. However, the issue of the king salmon and the management decision to do whatever is possible to ensure the success of the king salmon thriving in the Cook Inlet has been an area of concern for quite some time. And our fishermen feel discriminated against. We want them to fish. We wish that we could wave that wand and change everything, but this has been a decades issue. And this is one area that has been proposed and has received a lot of support. It is not without opposition. This to me feels very, very wrong because I want the fishermen to fish. But we do, I believe it is our responsibility to find a solution that works with the managers. And before I go to the sponsor of the bill, I just want to state that the current buyback structure that requires a tax on those same fishermen isn't doable for this set of fishermen because their allocation has been continually reduced, that there's no way that they would be able to ever fulfill the requirements of that taxation to be able to meet the buyback. And that's why a different solution needs to be proposed for this specific set of fishermen. We can work through the nuances of this and obviously the amount and the way that it's done is still up for discussion. That's the purpose of this, but I wish it were different. Representative Refridge.
Thank you, Chair Vance. And I do want to thank the committee for taking such a significant amount of time again to discuss what is a relatively regional concern. And so I know for many of you who are not in a district that is bordered by the Cook Inlet, this might seem foreign. And I do appreciate the good questions and the good discussion. In a little bit of wrap up, I want to share kind of to Representative Carpenter's point about the fairness. I actually had significant concerns about this bill for a very similar reason. And actually, one of the components of this bill that helped me come to a conclusion that indeed there was a fairness element baked in is that we are not just drafting a bill that says a lottery exists. We're drafting a bill that says we're allowing you to elect to be included in whatever this statutory framework is that does include a lottery. So there is an election first. And if the people of the East Side SetNet community say, you know what, I'm going to roll the dice and I'm going to just, and they can convince, you know, the other members of that community who think the same way they do, that maybe this is not the solution, we're at least giving them the ability to somewhat control their own destiny. Right now, they're just being told, no fish for you. I'm really sorry. Maybe try dip netting. And that's egregious to me. This bill, in its current form, at least allows them to take a vote as to whether or not they even want to have this program go forward. And so that, to me, helps resolve that issue of fairness. It does not address the underlying issue that a lottery ultimately does pick winners and losers in sort of a game of chance. But when you elect to have the game of chance, that is your ability to have your fairness opportunity. So, to wrap up, I really do thank the committee and thank you to Chair Vance for the amount of time and staff time you've dedicated to this bill. And certainly looking forward to being back again. So thank you.
Thank you. And I was just looking that we are not having committee on Thursday because I believe we will likely be on the floor. And I hate it that we keep getting bumped in this committee because we have important work with the fishery. But with that being said, this is such a big deal. I want to allow members to be able to work with the sponsor and talk to managers, Fish and Game, Commissioner Haight, on what the appropriate amendments would be. So since we have a little bit more time, I want to set the amendment deadline for this Friday at 5 p.m., and we will send that email out as well. So that concludes our business for today. The House Special Committee on Fisheries will meet again next Tuesday, April 2nd at 10 a.m., with an agenda forthcoming. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 11:52 a.m.